This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Buddy, and before we turn the internet on, I ask you to please put your phones on vibrate and welcome you. I'd like to greet our internet of listeners too as well. And we'd like to make a few introductions as well. We've got some special guests in the room. We've got two of our pages with us. If they'll stand or wave when I say their names, we have Brittany Butler from Chamberlain. Hi, Brittany. And we also have Gail Ashley Gabriel from Riva and Newell. Both towns are just in between the two towns. Must be in between them. I have my kids here today, too, so I'm going to introduce my kids. I have Kennedy and Booker. If you guys want to stand up, wave and smile. So they're going to be with me all week, so if you see them running through the halls, grab them and tell them to slow down. So glad you're here. We will also have the secretary call the roll.
Representative Bloomgarden.
Here.
Ingalls.
Here.
Feinstein.
Here.
Gosch.
Here.
Hunhoff.
Here.
Lucas.
Here.
Lust.
Here.
Rausch.
Yep.
Rave.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Turbeville.
Here.
Noam.
Here.
Fain. Madam Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Moved by Turbeville, seconded by Rausch. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. So moved. Minutes have been approved. I'd like to remind everyone who's going to be testifying on bills today to please sign in at the back. And also, if you are lobbying on behalf of a group or an organization, that you please have your badges on and have them apparent where we can see them. So, testifiers, if you're going to be testifying today, the pages will be available to distribute any handouts that you would like to give to the committee or members of the audience. They will be there to do that if you need them to. All of the questions that and discussion will go through the chair today as a reminder, so we will conduct that accordingly. And we will open up, starting with consideration of bills. We'll open up the hearing on House Bill 1096, which is an act to provide for a temporary reduction of legislator salaries and to declare an emergency. Are there any proponents to House Bill 1096? Welcome. Is your mic on?
Now it is.
There we go.
Madam Chair, Eldon Nygaard, District 17, gentlemen of the committee. I would use ladies, but there aren't any on the committee other than Madam Chair, of course. I come before you today to speak on behalf of House Bill 1096, an act to reduce the salaries and declare an emergency of legislators' salaries, that is. And that's not a statement that legislative salaries are too high, because if I remember correctly, I believe I voted for an increase of salaries last year. We have the same salary today that we had 10 years ago, but that does not make us unique with many of the people in this great state. Hutchinson Technology in Sioux Falls, as you know, finally closed its doors, letting go the last 300 employees after having laid off 270 before that. Portec in Yankton has been laying off about 20 people at a time for the last few months and actually took 10% salary reductions in their workforce in an effort to keep the doors open. Unemployment rate in South Dakota, even though it's not near what the national rate is, has doubled in the last year. Farm sector, as you are aware, farm and ranch has remained somewhat steady. However, that too faces the uncertainties of the economic climate, especially in regard to the fuel situation. Fuel prices are climbing up steadily. And as that escalates, we face the possibility that the inputs for agriculture will increase dramatically in the next year. All of this is to say that we face some uncertain times and have some challenges. This bill is offered as from a legislator, myself and others, both sides of the aisle, and I want to make that clear, that both Democrats and Republicans are signed on this bill, in an attempt to lead and an attempt to share the sacrifices that are being made currently, and also those sacrifices and challenges that, as a result of balancing this budget, we're going to be asking the public to make. Incidentally, in Cracker Barrels and discussions back home over these first few weeks since the news of this bill hit the press, I've had solid responses from the average working person. They realize that the roughly $31,000 that it represents will not balance the budget. However, they appreciate, and have told me so, that they appreciate us taking the lead and putting our money where our mouth is when it comes to taking cuts. It's still a 5% reduction. And if there are those on the panel today who, in the committee, who think that is de minimis, then I would certainly be amenable to any amendment that would increase this. If you feel that it needs to be more. My feeling personally is that it's the symbolic cutting of our salaries that the public is waiting to see. And perhaps it's something that will cause others to take that kind of move. So I ask you to have the guts to face this problem and move for passage of 1096. Thank you. And I'll remain standby for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Nygaard. Any further proponents to House Bill 1096? Further proponents for House Bill 1096? Any opponents to House Bill 1096? Any opponents for House Bill 1096? In that case, I will waive the rebuttal and open it up for committee questions. Any committee questions for the sponsor of the bill?
Madam Chair.
Representative Steele.
I'd like to move that I'd like to move this bill to bill number 1096 to the 41st day.
We're not taking motions right now. We're just asking questions. Any further questions of the committee? Question for Representative Rausch.
That's for Representative Nygaard.
Madam Chair.
In my experience, as I go around and are asking people at large, especially at farm and home shows, asking, I'm sure they all agreed that 5% cut would be nice to do. They also all agreed that they thought we got paid somewhere in the neighborhood of $16,000 to $20,000 a year. And I'm asking you in some of your comments, are they aware that the wage that we get is only a nominal fee?
Madam Chair, Representative Rausch, I believe that's a good question. I doubt that they are aware of the actual suffering that we already undergo, that is to say, probably costing us more to come here and work than what we get remunerated, as evinced by this past election where they denied voting for looked at the 5 cent a mile raise and thought that was too much. But I still believe that my earlier presentation represents good rationale to pass this bill.
Further questions of the committee? Representative Boomgarden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question kind of comes into, how do you feel that this would affect a number of legislators who come out here and actually take pay and cuts already? I know there's a number of farmers, there's attorneys that do work in the evenings. There are also self-employed people who have their businesses going as well at home. But there's a number of other people that come out here to the legislature that lose quite a bit more than just 5%. What's your opinion on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Boomgarden, I I believe this amounts to $300 a piece. And I believe that I also farm, and of course, this being the time of year that we're, the main farming activity is if you have livestock, of course. And I realize that that's something that people are already addressing. They've got a family member or a neighbor or a friend taking care of the livestock. That $300 does show real sharing of suffering on the part of certain legislators. We also know that there are legislators here who have a great deal of money, and that this is probably one of the most important things of the year for them, and maybe don't do that much during the rest of the year. So across the board, you couldn't say that it hurts everyone. It certainly will have that effect on a few. But then that further illustrates the point that we're here to share in the suffering. Does that answer your question?
One more follow-up. Do you think this will affect the people that do come out here who are already at their means to maybe not donate to certain charities and other organizations that they normally do at home?
That might be possible, yes. In fact, I think across South Dakota, we're going to find charities having a harder time during these times.
Further questions of the committee? Further questions? Representative Feinstein.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Nygaard, just coming back to the just prior question, doesn't this does this bill affect any future legislature?
Madam Chair, does this bill, let me make sure I understand the question. Does this bill affect future legislators?
Yes, that's the question.
No, it does not, in that this is put for 1 year and only, and that, you know, at the next session, if it's we're still in a deepening or a deep recession, we could revisit this then. It's just for 1 year.
Thank you, Mr. Nygaard.
Further questions of the committee? We will open it up then to committee discussion and or action. Representative Steele.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would now like to make a motion to move Bill 1096 to the 41st day.
Second.
Motion to move House Bill 1096 to the 41st day is moved by Representative Steele, seconded by Turbeville. Any discussion on that action, that motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. The budget, I don't know, is short something like $80 million. This is going to save a little over $30,000. And I don't know, but in Sioux Falls, we're out here 2 months out of the year. The other 10 months, I attend meetings, have phone calls, do emails many times every week. And Carrie Weems, my first year that she was in, kept a study on what she really got paid for the whole year. It come out somewhere around 27 or 28 cents an hour. We're talking about $6,000. I believe it was well over 10 years ago the last time we got a raise. I believe all this does is it's a feel-good, warm, fuzzy, which our friends on the other side started. Sounds like it sounds something like I really care, but it is basically just symbolic. I don't know. And I don't think it really accomplishes anything. Therefore, I'd like to move it. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Further committee discussion?
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Feinstein.
Madam Chair, thank you. I believe we have to resist this motion. We're here, I don't know how somebody can say this is symbolic. We're asking for a 5% cut. We're asking for a $300 cut. We're cutting, according to the governor's budget, the Arts Council. We're cutting Birth to Three, if we go along with that. We're cutting so many things. Yes, this is only $30,000, but each one of those is only a small amount in the whole cuts. We have to do our part. We have other states such as California. that are telling their employees that they will take a furlough one day every 2 weeks without pay. That amounts to a 10% cut. We're asking for 5% here. Other states started their cuts in March or April last year. We're trying to do something today. We're trying to tell the folks of South Dakota that we're willing to take it too. It isn't just everybody outside of this hall. And yes, when I first saw this, I said, yeah, I could sure use the $300 instead of, you know, I'm losing it for my business. But I believe a reduction is better than no job at all. And I think that's what we have to tell folks in state government. We have to tell folks in the state of South Dakota that we're all better off to have people employed. We're better off taking a cut and not losing jobs. And I think, it is symbolic, and that is the point, is it is symbolic. And it is showing the folks that we, too, are willing to take that. Thank you.
Further committee discussion. Yeah. Representative Lust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would ask you to support this motion. The prime sponsor of this mentioned sacrifice in his testimony. And I look on this committee, I look at Representative Ingalls, Representative Rave, Representative Noem, Representative Gosh, Representative Boomgarden, and myself, who have young children, and you want to talk sacrifice. These folks sacrifice every time they come here for 2 months. And they miss time with their kids, they miss time with their families, not to mention those on this panel and throughout the legislature who miss time with their families, young or old, who sacrifice their jobs and things they do in their community. I think if the public at large knew that we make $6,000 for those 2 months and the additional time we spent outside of session with, as indicated by Representative Steele, they would understand that we do sacrifice. And if there's one thing I hear more than anything else from my constituents is, I can't believe the sacrifices you make to do this. So I think the idea of sacrifice is inherent in what we do here. And this, in my mind, cutting our salary 5%, our meager salary 5%, frankly trivializes the sacrifices we make through not spending time with our family and our jobs. And therefore, I would ask you to resist this. I think it's maybe well-meaning. I think it's misplaced. Thank you.
Further committee discussion. Representative Ingalls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regardless of how you vote on this motion, I believe it's a good reminder to all of us as we consider a whole bunch of bills this year, how we could impact the people that those bills target. We're going to be asked this year to raise a lot of fees on a lot of people, and $300 salary cut for us will hurt some more than it will hurt others. As it's been pointed out already, we are making sacrifices to be here. Yet I think it's a good thing to talk about regardless of how we vote, because there's a whole bunch of bills that will come up this year that are really going to affect real people. And even a $50 fee increase for somebody might hurt a number of people more than, say, a $300 salary cut would hurt us. So I think when we consider all those bills this year, we should consider the impact on people, just as with this bill, we're considering the impact on ourselves.
Further committee discussion. Representative Gosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would echo Representative Lust's remarks on this bill and also comment that, like Representative Nygaard, I had a chance to talk to a few people during our last Cracker Barrel. And since I heard about the bill, I've kind of been taking an unscientific poll asking various people what they thought we made. And it's always been between $15,000 and $30,000 a year, not the actual $6,000 that we make. And at the very last Cracker Barrel, the two people who guessed said, well, it's 20 to 30, right? And the other gentleman said, well, it's at least 20. So I think there's that perception that we're, that we are making, a decent amount for what we do. And when they find out what we actually make, they always seem so surprised by it. 5% in actual dollars doesn't amount to much, but I think if we asked state employees to take that same type of 5% cut, we'd be hearing from a lot of people. Also, in the budget books, according to the general funds funding source actual for 08, the legislative branch of government has the least significant impact on the general funds compared to any other branch, less than one-third of the branch in second place. And the overall budget is even a greater disparity of what the legislative body costs this state. So with that, I would also urge we support the motion to move this to the 41st day. Thank you.
Further committee discussion. Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is that all we make? I no wonder my checking account is overdrawn. I had no idea. No, seriously. As often happens in the rare thin air of fourth floor here, Representative Nygaard's bill is being attacked from two different fronts, sometimes by the same people. Some say it's just symbolic and it means nothing except symbolism, and others are saying it's just too harsh of a cut. So let me just very briefly, in all those issues have somewhat been addressed, but think about this. When tough times happen to people in our neighborhood, to our neighbors, to our family, we make symbolic gestures to show that we care, and that's what Representative Nygaard is trying to do. And yet I think the $30,000, I served on Appropriations Committee for 4 years, the $30,000 is also not meaningless. They'll go through that budget in the last week, and they will cut many decent little programs that cost, you know, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000. So something good will happen with that $30,000 that we sacrifice to show that we care and that we understand the troubles that our neighbors are going through back home. So I urge you to support the bill.
Further committee discussion. Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't sign on the bill, and I told Representative Nygaard that I wouldn't vote for it either. And it's primarily because last year I brought the salary, one of the salary increase bills. And I brought that for two reasons. One was I was on the 2004 Constitutional Revision Commission, and that committee felt that a number of people would not run or do not run for the legislature because they lose money, as has been indicated, and personal sacrifice for being up here for the 40 days and or 35-day sessions we have. The other reason I brought it last year is I was also advocating for the two 40-day sessions to clear that up in our Constitution, and I felt the salary raise would be commensurate with doing that, and the people of South Dakota were wise enough to allow for two 40-day sessions in our last election. It is true the last raise, I think, was in 1996. It was a representative from Vermilion, Gary Sokolow, brought that, and at that time it was $4,000 and it went to $6,000 per year. I do believe, you know, we need to look at our expenses, however, and maybe the e-board would be the best place to do that. And our per diem, maybe we are in a deflationary time, and maybe our per diem expenses actually could be lessened. I think it's something that takes a little more steady than what we're able to do here. Some states allow different fluctuations or different rates of per diem depending on where you live. For those that may live in the county of their state capital, they do not allow as much or if any at all. So I do believe it should be paid fairly and accurately. I also advocated for removing the nickel a mile from our Constitution because it's inappropriate to have rates of pay in our Constitution. But the message I got on that from the citizens that they do think we receive more pay than what we do. And then also we have this per diem and other fringe benefits that I haven't been able to locate around here outside of a place to park close to the Capitol. So with that, I will support the motion to defer.
Further committee discussion. Well, I want to close with a few comments. A lot of discussion was given regarding the governor's proposed budget that he's given us and some of the cuts that are going to be happening to different areas and different programs. And if you remember, when you look at that budget, the governor also gave some cuts to the legislative branch that he threw out there as well. Some of them had to do with FTEs that the Legislative Research Council had, some travel recommendations and reductions. As long as we're talking proposals that are floating out there as far as birth to three, education, other considerations, there are cuts to this legislative branch that are being considered as well. So I think that's a good thing to remember as we're having this discussion and some facts to have out there. I think it's to South Dakota's benefit that we have a citizens legislature. I think it's we make better decisions because we're business people, and we make decisions that impact all South Dakotans better because we live the same life that they do. If we start electing people who come up here and it doesn't matter what the pay is because they have so much disposable income that they can afford to come here for 2.5 months, I don't think that would be in our best interest. I think it's best to have people here who live real lives and who understand that. So I think it's good that we maintain a quality of having a citizens legislature here who know what the impacts of a dollar is and to remember the kinds of cuts that are being proposed this year and to keep all of that in balance as we go forward. So our motion that is before us is to send House Bill 1096 to the 41st day. All those in favor will vote aye. All those opposed will vote nay. The secretary will call the vote.
Representative Boomgarten.
Aye.
Ingalls.
Aye.
Feinstein.
Nope.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
No.
Lucas.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Rausch.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Turbeville. Nome.
Aye.
Madam Chair, we have 10 voting yes and 2 voting no.
House Bill 1096 is sent to the 41st day. We will now open up the hearing on House Bill 1132, which is an act to prohibit the charging of admission to the Cultural Heritage Center. Do we have any proponents for House Bill 1132? Okay. We're going to move House Bill 1132 to the bottom of the calendar. Committee will be in recess. Let's be in recess for 5 minutes until we find the sponsors of our bill. Can do while we're in a holding pattern right now. The governor has 3 bills here that he would like to have introduced, so we would need to have a motion to introduce these bills and second it in order to take them down and get them filed. So the proper wording for the motion would be, Dave, introduction of governor's bill on behalf of the House State Affairs Committee. The title is, this governor's House bill was considered at a meeting of the Committee on State Affairs, regularly called and attended by the members thereof, at which meeting a majority of the full membership of said committee voted that the bill was introduced as a committee bill. And then the act is for an act entitled to increase the annual license stamp fee upon certain gaming devices. I would entertain a motion. Motion made by Rausch, seconded by Rave. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. Roll call. I am in doubt.
Representative Boomgarten?
Aye.
Ingalls?
No.
Feinstein?
No.
Gosch?
Pass.
Hunhoff?
No.
Lucas?
Aye.
Lust?
Aye.
Rausch?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Steele?
Aye.
Turberville?
No.
Nome?
Aye.
Madam Chair, we have seven. Gush?
No.
Okay. Madam Chair, we have seven yes and five no.
Bill will be introduced on behalf of the State Affairs Committee. The next one we can take care of is for an act entitled to repeal certain provisions relating to the Education Enhancement Tobacco Trust Fund. I would entertain a motion.
Move.
Motion made by Rausch, seconded by Rave. All those in favor vote aye.
Aye.
All those opposed nay.
No.
The ayes have it. So introduced. The third bill is for an act entitled an act to revise certain provisions regarding administration of the Catastrophic County Poor Relief Fund. I would entertain a motion.
So moved. Second.
Motion made by Rausch, seconded by Rave. All those in favor vote aye.
Aye.
All those opposed vote nay.
No.
So moved. And thank you for doing that business. Appreciate it. All right, we will take up hearing now on House Bill 1175, which is an act to adopt the Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunity for Military Children. Are there any proponents to House Bill 1175? Welcome. Please introduce yourselves.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. I'm Representative Deb Peters from District 9 in Hartford, South Dakota.
And I'm Senator Jeff.
You have to turn it off. There you go.
Senator Jeff Haverly from District 35, all this new high-tech equipment you have over here. Rapid City, and I'm here for moral support.
Madam Chair, just a quick question on I do have about a 9-minute video. If it's okay before we start, do you have time, or would you be interested in watching just a little bit of historical before on this particular bill?
We do have time, absolutely.
Okay, there we go. Cool. It works. Yes. Excuse me, I put my computer on mute, so I have to undo that here. Well, I'm trying. Having technical difficulties, apparently. Pardon? No. I'm not. It's. You guys have time for this, okay? Well, we might have to skip this if I can't get it to go. The volume. Oh, there we are. Balance. All right, here we go. We'll try this take two. It's not playing the volume. Hold on.
General. So for him to be a 2-star general, that's a big deal for him. I enjoy the moves, but... because, you know, I've gotten used to staying in one place for 4 years, and that's the longest I've ever stayed anywhere. It's hard, but...
Here we go. We'll do it this way.
his dad was a two-star general. So for him to be a two-star general, that's a big deal for him. I enjoyed the moves, but this last one, I wasn't so sure about moving because, you know, I've gotten used to staying in one place for 4 years, and that's the longest I've ever stayed. It's hard, but, you know, I do it because I love them. Military families move, on average, every 2.9 years. That's a lot of moving, especially when you've got kids in school. My daughter attended 5 schools before 5th grade and was very typical of a lot of the military children that we knew.
I have 3 boys. I have a 26-year-old, a 24-year-old, and a 16-year-old. At least 8 or 9 times in the course of their...
The boys are having a...
Deployments and frequent moves affect over 1 million soldiers.
We might not watch this.
...for keeping our nation safe. But who's taking care of their families while they serve our country? Each move and each deployment causes unimaginable stress. The states are working hard to ease these transitions, but each state has making transitions difficult for military parents. With military mobilizations and deployments at an all-time high, the need for collective action is ever-present.
Until my son was a junior in high school, I thought it was our fault. If I could have been a better mom... We'll just take this. I don't know why it discontinued it. It's still playing, so... I'll mute this here. I was hoping not to have to talk so much and let the video do the talking. Anyway, well, House Bill 1175, as you can tell here, is basically military families move between postings on a regular basis. While reassignments can often be a boon for the career of the military individual, they usually play havoc with the children and the families, losing and making new friends, adjusting to new cities, and changing schools. While the armed services has taken a great leap to ease this transition on the transition of personnel on their spouses and, most importantly, their children, much remains to be done at the state and local levels to ensure that the children of military families are afforded that same opportunity for educational success, as other children are not. So, because other children are not penalized or delayed in achieving their educational goals by inflexible administrative and bureaucratic practices. Specific impacts on the military children include records transfers, course sequencing, graduation requirements, exclusion from extracurricular activities, redundant or missed entrance and exit testing, kindergarten and first grade entrance, age variances, and the power of custodial parents while parents are deployed. A new interstate compact on educational opportunities for military children addressed these issues, as well as compact enforcement, administration, finances, communication, status sharing, and training. The new compact establishes an independent compact operating authority, the Interstate Commission, which will be positioned to address future interstate problems and issues as they arise. The development of interstate and intrastate solutions to these issues is of paramount importance to the military families. While armed services personnel are serving our country, their children may, more often than not, be adversely affected by these and other educational policies. While many states and communities have responded on an ad hoc basis to ease the shift of military children, no comprehensive national policy approach exists to improving the long-term educational transitions or outcomes of this constituency. The Council of State Governments, in cooperation with the U.S. Department of Defense, has drafted this piece of legislation of this new interstate compact that addresses the educational transition issues of children of military families. Since 2006, this CSG has worked with a variety of federal, state, and local officials, as well as national stakeholder organizations representing educational groups, military families, to create the new interstate agreement. While this compact is not exhaustive in its coverage, it does address the key issues encountered by military families, eligibility, enrollment, placement, and graduation. In addition, the compact provides for a detailed governance structure and both the state and national levels with built-in enforcement and compliance mechanisms. This new compact applies to the children of active duty members of the uniformed services, including members of the National Guard and Reserves on active duty, members or veterans of the uniformed services who are severely injured and medically discharged or retired for a period of 1 year after medical discharge or retirement,
and members of the uniformed services who die on active duty as a result of injuries sustained on active duty for a period of 1 year or death. This compact facilitates educational records transfers, immunizations, age of enrollment, course continuation, powers of attorney, tuition, non-custodial parents, extracurricular activities. It assists with placement, course placement, educational program placement, special education services, placement flexibility. In addition to graduation, it helps with waiver requirements, exit exams, and transfers during the senior year. This is, before I continue, this is where I'm going to start talking about the money. The money and the state will have to put together, each state will have to require and develop a state council to provide for coordination among its agencies of government, local education agencies, and military installations concerning the state's participation in and compliance with this compact. While each member state may determine the membership of its own state council, its membership must include at least the state superintendent of education, superintendent of school districts with a high concentration of military children, representative from a military installation, one representative from the legislature and executive branches of government and other offices and stakeholders groups the state council deems appropriate. Another piece where the money comes in here is the governing body of this new interstate compact will be composed of representatives from each member of each state, as well as various ex officio members representing impacted stakeholders and groups. So as you can see, the Department of Defense has put a price tag of $1 per active duty student on this package, and right now South Dakota has 1,702 kids that are impacted in the state of South Dakota, so we've got about $1,702. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that number, but I think it's a little too low based on the per diem cost of getting all the putting together this group and et cetera. So that's pretty much all I had for House Bill 1175. It is something that South Dakota needs to take a look at. It is something that's critical to our national defense. It's critical for our families' our national readiness when our troops are deployed. However, I would ask that due to the price tag of this, I would want you to take a look at it, review it, and think in the future that this is something that South Dakota should look at doing, putting together. But due to the price tag at this time, I don't know if the state of South Dakota can afford it. So with that, I'd stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Peters. Any further proponents of House Bill 1175? Further proponents of House Bill 1175? Opponents of House Bill 1175? Any opponents of House Bill 1175? We'll waive the rebuttal and open it up to committee questions. Representative Turbeville.
Yes, I have a question of the sponsor, please. I'm having a difficult time with this, not being able to view the 9-minute video. And but I'd like to refer to page 21, line 13. And the question it's a paragraph B, default technical assistance suspension. If a member state has defaulted in the performance of its obligation, can you give me some idea how we can default? I mean, what is a default?
Madam Chair, I do not know at this time. Okay. Maybe my...
Perhaps in the video?
Yeah, it might be in the video. Thank you for the question. How we might default as a... And I haven't... She was looking it up on there. But the only way a state can default is if you don't follow the rules that are set forth by the compact, the interstate compact. Because that's essentially what you're doing is you're drawing into contract with all these other states to follow these rules. If you don't follow these rules, then you would be put in default by the interstate compact.
All right. Thank you. Nothing further.
Representative Rave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peters, back on page 15, I know you had referenced a $1,700 approximate cost, and section F, line 12, it talks about purchasing and maintaining insurance and bonds. Who are we purchasing insurance and bonds for, and that would have to be, I would assume, a greater cost than $1,700. Maybe you could address that.
This question. Thank you, Representative Brady, for the question. First of all, the $1,700 and the total dollar amount that they talk about for the interstate compact and the number of active duty dependents, K through 12 or ages 5 through 18, that applies to the cost to form the interstate compact, not the state's portion. And I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding just due to some of the chatter I've heard from other folks that have come forward. The state would then be responsible for paying their portion to have what is required, a state council that is part of the national compact, where that state council would then nominate or elect a person to be a member of the national council. This has been, and as Representative Peters said, that, you know, the $1,700 amount, while you can't argue with that because that's based on hard data of members, dependents at Ellsworth Air Force Base, which is our only active duty installation, the total number, if you include the reserve dependents, is another $2,656, but they don't come into play until that member of the Guard or Reserve has been activated to put to active duty status. So if everybody in the Guard was activated all at the same time, which isn't going to happen, then the total number for South Dakota would be 4,358. And just on a side note, to give you an example, I'm trying to find a big state here, the state of Georgia, they have 38,000 active duty members, okay, not including their Guard, but they have 56 including their Guard, 56,000. So you can see how the compact, the interstate compact, is formed via the dollar amount. But again, it's gonna fluctuate as to how much your state puts in, as to how many students you have that are eligible for that cost. I don't think I got to your question, but I think that'll clear up some of the thought behind it.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Representative Ingalls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've never served in the military, but it seems to me if you go into combat, you would want to make sure that your comrades are behind you. And it seems like you're here in front of us alone, and some would say state affairs is combat. I would have expected to see the Secretary of Military and Veterans Affairs or somebody from the Department of Education, and we're not hearing anything from any of them on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reason there is nobody else here is we basically told the individuals that were backing the bill and also any of the opponents that we were bringing it forward as an issue that we need to discuss for the future. This is a good idea. It's something we need to approach now. However, due to the economic situation that we are facing as a state, we didn't feel it was the best time to go forward with a plan. This bill was put in, and we were working on this bill before December. It was something that we thought if we had the economic advantages that we've had in the past, that it would be something that would be nice to go forward and offer our military folks. However, due to the economic situation that we are faced with, we felt that we would get an audience with a committee, get it out on the internet, start the discussion, and then have you guys quietly kill the bill.
Madam Chair, if I could please, and to add to that, she explained the process of what we went through. We decided to continue to bring the bill forward. We have, in fact, met with the Secretary of Education, and the whole purpose for this, for you folks, and bringing it into this committee is not to demean you or show that you're not patriotic. In fact, it's just the opposite. It's the fact that you're willing to listen to the problem that military members are facing, not just in South Dakota, across the nation. In talking to the gentleman from the Department of Defense that brought this forward, many states are faced with the same situation that we are this year. They have the 10 states necessary to make the compact move forward, initiate the starting of the compact, and that's what they required, was 10 states initially just to get the compact started. They have those. I think as of 2008, 11 states, I think, have actually signed on to the compact. So this is a relatively new process for everybody. But again, in talks with Jim Rickles from the Department of Defense, who works for the Undersecretary, he understands that any cost that states are facing right now are going to be paramount to take care of their own state budgets first, and they understand that. So, again, it was more so to get the conversation going, and he met with the Secretary of Education. He met with Dale Birch from the Governor's Office. A few of the lobbyists, our LRC folks, were involved in the conversation. We had two representatives from LRC. Everybody knew or knows, other than you folks, that there are steps being taken to bring this forward next year. And thank you for the question.
Further committee questions? Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also became aware of this on the Education Committee with NCSL, and it's my understanding that we need to make assurances that students aren't left without the credits they need to graduate. It's not only seniors, but also those coming in to they get those credits in the traditional 4 years, and as well to get the credits necessary for state-sponsored scholarships. So can then a parent of a military child go to the Interstate Compact and request assurance that, you know, somebody may transfer in and their student's going to be a freshman or sophomore in high school? Can they receive assurance that the credits that they bring in from another state will mesh with the credits that we require in South Dakota for high school graduation?
Madam Chair? Yes, to a certain extent. But then again, that's what the compact is formed for, is to take all the issues which Representative Peters mentioned earlier, all the issues facing military members when it comes to transferability of credits. We have, you know, we have tons more information than what we were able to, you know, that we really wanted to present today, because we don't want to get bogged down with something that we're not going to even ask for approval to move forward on today. Again, it's more of a sales pitch today to keep in your mind when you see a military member out there, especially an active duty military member, whether it's Guard or somebody from our one installation of Ellsworth, keep in mind that, you know, that student, if they have children, is going to go through approximately, on average, 9 duty station changes in their career from kindergarten to their senior time. And it's very frustrating for military members to have to deal with that transferability. So the whole compact idea was, first of all, to identify that there was, in fact, a problem, and then to come up with a result or a fix to the problem, which is what the compact has done. And it's through the CSG and many of the other states' organizations, political organizations, that they've been able to come up with this and say, these are the primary goals to fix these educational situations for these military members. So can we do it now? Sure. Is it overarching, or does it cover everything? Probably not. But I think I've gotten assurances from the Secretary of Education. He's going to look at this, and I think he'll be able to even take some of the inputs. It's not just about South Dakota gaining students. It's about South Dakota sending students to another state as well. And the compact or the contract with these other states says that they will do it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess as far as the cost, I'm confused why it should be borne by states. You know, in particular, we're talking about active duty. Why doesn't the federal government come forth with the money to ensure that this compact can be fully funded?
Madam Chair, if I and I'll answer this as nicely as I can. Instead of the federal government coming down with unfunded mandates or funded for that purpose, state compacts have been used for well over, 200 years, 100 years or something. I mean, it's a form to be able to let states take care of issues within themselves. The funding, which is the key basis behind being able to enact this, is based on a state's participation via the amount of dependents that are affected, which South Dakota, again, goes back to 1700. But as I read to you, one of the top states, Georgia, has like 56,000. So if you combine the totals of those students that are affected, it's sort of a pay-as-you-go, if you will, by the states that this is all that they have to pay. But that's not to say that they're not going to have internal costs for the state. So it's up to the state whether they want to participate in this compact. Is it important? Yes. I mean, being a retired military member, I think anybody that's served in the military will be able to tell you that it's the military members generally taken care of. It's the dependents that aren't taken care of when you move. you only have to place yourself in the picture of a member coming back from the desert that's been wounded to the point where he has to leave service. And this compact allows for 1 year after that point to get make sure everything is working. Well, the member's taken care of, but not the member's dependents. Same thing would apply to a member that would die over in the Middle East and come back. So the costs are, it's only affiliated with the amount of members that are in your state. And I think it's a good way to avoid the mandates by the federal government and states working together instead of the federal government coming down and mandating something.
Further committee questions? I will open it up then to committee discussion and or action.
Madam Chair.
Representative Turbeville.
Madam Chair, I would respectfully move that we defer House Bill 1175 to the 41st day.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Gosh. The motion is to defer House Bill 1175 to the 41st day. Motion is moved by Turbeville, seconded by Gosh. Any discussion on that motion? Representative Turbeville.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Peters and Senator Haverly for bringing this issue to us. It is very important, and I think when the time comes in the future that this situation needs to be handled by the legislature, I would certainly appreciate you bringing it back, and we would look at it in a very favorably manner. As we all know, that our troops, as when they are deployed and have been for hundreds of years, the issue is always what happens to the people back home. You know, we have as a member of the armed forces that was deployed overseas, I know the stress that this puts on a family, and I know that in many cases the children back home are the ones that have to accept the rigors of a parent being overseas. And now we're talking about not only the mother but also the father. I think that there are other issues that are extremely important to the military and things that we as a state and a legislature should look at. There are issues not only of housing, but there's also issues of pay. And we, as time goes on and we continue with our efforts over in Afghanistan and Iraq, I think we need to do everything that we can to make the separation as easy as possible, make it as painless as possible, and do everything that we can to see that the children of the soldiers are educated and well taken care of. So I thank you for this, and we will send it to the 41st day, but you have made the issue public, and I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? Representative Steele.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think there's anybody here in our group, at least most and probably all of us, that strongly support our military. Being former military myself, I know I do. But and the key being the cost of the program, I look forward to this coming back next year with a dollar figure on it and being able to serve our dependents. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? Okay, the motion before us is to send House Bill 1175 to the 41st day. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. And the secretary will call the vote.
Representative Boomgarden.
Aye.
Ingalls.
Aye.
Feinstein.
No.
Gosh.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Lucas.
No.
Lust.
Aye.
Rausch.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Turbeville.
Aye.
Noem.
Aye.
Madam Chair, we have 10 yes and 2 no.
Motion passes. House Bill 1175 is deferred to the 41st day. We will open up committee discussion on House Bill 1132, which is an act to prohibit the charging of admission to the Cultural Heritage Center. Are there any proponents to House Bill 1132? Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to appear this morning. I'm Jerry Lang, representative from District 8, Madison, retired history professor from DSU. And this bill comes to you because our neighboring state to the north is one of my favorite places is the Cultural Heritage Museum up there, and this bill would bring us in conformity to our sister state in the north, which prohibits charging for visiting their museum. Now, we don't charge to visit the Capitol, and it seems to me we shouldn't charge to visit the People's Cultural Center. This was true up until about 95, 96, when this was changed in order to provide property tax relief. North Dakota encourages people to come visit their Cultural Heritage Center. They have 1 million visitors when I was up there a few years ago, compared with our 200,000. We don't need this something like 22,000. It's not a big item. It could be made up if we made the Cultural Heritage Center a tourism attraction and advertised it to help make Pierre a destination visiting location. So when I came up the steps this morning, I looked at General Beadle and I said, what would you say to these people, General Beadle, the founder of the great education system in this state by protecting school and public lands? Would you think that people should be discouraged from visiting their own cultural heritage center? And I think I heard him say, no, I think this committee will be wise enough to say, let's go for it. Let's reverse the mistake that was made back in, I believe it was in 1995, 96, that session back there when we were trying to give property tax relief. Ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time to make the bold step and say to the people of South Dakota and the nation, look, we've got something here special for you to see. Come and visit us free of charge, but spend lots of money downtown and at our hotels and bars. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further proponents for House Bill 1132? Further proponents for House Bill 1132? Are there any opponents to House Bill 1132?
Good morning, Madam Chairman. I'm J.D. Vogt. I'm director of the South Dakota State Historical Society, which is a division of the Department of Tourism and State Development. We currently operate in five program areas: archaeology, archives, historic preservation, museum, and research and publishing. And under the current budget proposal, the Society will take a 36% cut with the elimination of our archaeology program and the closing of the Archaeological Research Center in Rapid City. So specifically getting to House Bill 1132, this further reduces our budget by eliminating a modest but important source of earned income. We use this earned income to hire a volunteer coordinator who recruits and schedules non-paid state employees up at the Cultural Heritage Center, our team of volunteers. We've approached legislative spouses in the past who've been here throughout the session. In fact, Alice Lang has been a very good volunteer for us up at the Cultural Heritage Center. Surrounding states of Montana, Minnesota, and Nebraska all charge admission to their state museums. Only the oil and gas-rich North Dakota and Wyoming do not charge admission to their state's museums. Based on a 2006 survey of the state museums, 42 out of 50 charged admission to their museums. Our current admission fee is only $4 for an adult. All school groups, including their chaperones, are allowed in free of charge. Anyone under 17 years of age or under, no matter which condition they come, whether they come with parents or grandparents or by themselves, are admitted free. And then members of the South Dakota State Historical Society get free admission for their contribution of a membership. In addition, the first Sunday of every month, the center and the museum is free admission to everyone. So there's lots of opportunities to come, whether you're an adult or not. But in addition, we really have opened the doors and made it possible for us to get our youth into the Cultural Heritage Center. Now, this is not a new proposal before this body. And in the past, when this has come up, you know, we were supported the idea if it was replaced with general funds revenue, and that was never enthusiastically embraced. And given the current economic situation, I don't see a change of heart in that situation. So therefore, I vigorously oppose House Bill 1132. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vogt. Any further opponents to House Bill 1132? Further opponents to House Bill 1132? I would offer a rebuttal time to Representative Lang if he would like one.
Thank you, but I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. We will open up to committee questions. Any committee questions? Representative Lucas.
I have a question for Mr. Voigt. You don't have to answer this, but are you going to vigorously oppose elimination of the archaeological funds?
Madam Chairman?
I'll allow it, although it doesn't apply to this bill.
It probably is one of those issues that I shouldn't have brought up, but you can see, obviously, it's on my mind and the 17 employees who are going to be losing their positions out there.
I have a question. Can you tell me the dollar amount that you bring in for admissions right now?
This current year, we're down a little bit. We're down to $17,300. It's been as high as $25,000.
Further questions of the committee? Representative Steele?
As long as we have it right there. No, thank you, Madam Chair. You quoted the 36% loss for the Rapid City Archaeology. What do you have a percent of what this loss is going to be if you lose that, if we do this now, if we do lose that $17,000?
The percentage of the cut, what the $17,300 would be?
What percent would that be compared to this other, the archaeology of 36%?
It'd be percent. Smaller in comparison, yes.
Yeah.
I don't have an exact number.
You don't?
No.
Representative Hunahoff.
Question for Mr. Vogt. If it was budgetarily possible, is this something you'd like to do to open the doors to free admission?
We'd be very open to that concept if we had the budgetary backup to make it work. It has... About 1995, the Appropriations Committee submitted a letter strongly encouraging us, after a budget cut, to increase revenue through admission fees to the museum, and that's why we took that action.
Further questions of the committee? No further questions. We'll open it up to committee discussion and or action. Representative Rausch.
Madam Chair, I would respectfully make a motion to move 1132 to the 41st day.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion is to move House Bill 1132 to the 41st day, moved by Rausch, seconded by Turpeville. Is there any discussion on that motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in echoing what the director said, in the tough times and the tough cuts that are being proposed right now to further take a, albeit a modest, revenue stream away from them would just not be appropriate at this time. So although the bill is well-intentioned, I think that the timing is definitely wrong, and I would ask the committee support in my motion to the 41st day.
Further discussion on the motion? I'd like to make a couple of comments. I do appreciate the fact that children are allowed in free. I think that's a good move, and I believe that you've made it a family-friendly place to go. It is a neat museum and a neat thing that South Dakota can promote, and I appreciate the access that we have, and I'm glad you have the resources to continue to offer that and allow volunteers to take part as well and keep them organized. So the motion before us is to move House Bill 1132 to the 41st day. We will have the secretary call for the vote. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the vote.
Representative Boomgarden.
Aye.
Ingalls.
Aye.
Feinstein.
No.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
No.
Lucas.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Rausch.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Turbeville.
Aye.
Nome.
Aye.
Madam Chair, we have 10 yes, 2 no.
House Bill 1132 is hereby deferred to the 41st day. That completes our calendar and our agenda for today. I'd like to ask the committee to leave their binders here for the secretary, please, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion moved by Turbeville, seconded by Rave. All those in favor vote aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. So adjourned.